I saw this really sweet article on your website about you and your husband, conductor David Robertson, that you were asked to talk about your relationship on WQXR for Valentine's Day.
Yes.
And I thought it was a really lovely article, and there was one thing in there that really struck me, and it's what you played at your wedding. You played the Liebeslieder waltzes.
One of our friends said after the wedding, clearly a musical friend, said, "When only the second set of Liebeslieder waltzes will do." So definitely what we needed. Yes. You know, I think there's those pieces are such a pure celebration of what love means. They're so full of joy, and specifically the joy of love. It seemed like the perfect choice. And at our wedding, my best friend also gave a toast in which she first said, you know, she's known me my whole life. And at first she said, "Now I've always known how much Orly loves dead Germans like Brahms. But now I'm excited to know how much she loves David." So it was actually, she didn't even realize it was the perfect segue into those waltzes.
That's really funny. You know, I love those waltzes too, and I sometimes play them over the weekend. And even though I don't understand German, that just you captured it so perfectly. There's so much joy in that music.
We think of him in certain ways as a nostalgic and a melancholy composer, but he actually, the joy that he finds when he finds it is far deeper, I think, than most other joys.
So tell me a little bit about the Bartók. I mean, when I think about the Bartók Piano Concerto No. 3, because that's what you're playing with the Bangor Symphony this weekend, I don't know that joy is necessarily the word that comes to mind, but I also have figured out about you that you like a challenge. Looking at some of the CDs and the works that you've recorded, you like to be challenged. And is the Bartók, does it attract you because it's a challenge?
I that's a great question. I think, yeah, it is a challenge. And I do think it finds joy. I've been thinking a lot about this piece. Coincidentally, I happen to have played Bernstein's Age of Anxiety Symphony just this past weekend, which was written 2 years later than the Bartók Third. And I think in many ways, they're both very much a reaction to World War II and where the sort of psyche, collective psyche was at the time. And both composers were living in America at the time. And what the Bartók does, you know, it has a first movement that is incredibly rich, very Bartókian, with clear lines that are so easy to follow. And that sets up then this second movement, which is this incredible spiritual journey that somehow sings to the heavens and in a real hymn-like way and explores the bird song and the natural sounds of the woods in that same context. And then I feel like his answer in that third movement is very much the joy of folk dancing, the joy of just getting together and enjoying music with your fellow man. It's really quite a journey. It's interesting. It's a compact concerto. It's not one of the longest by far, but it kind of covers everything there is to cover, which, considering this was his final piece, I think says a lot.
And I had read recently that, I know he died before he finished it. I can't remember how many bars, but there were a handful
17,
of bars left.
17 at, bars.
17. And they were finished by who?
By his student, Tibor Serli.
Oh, okay.
But I think that it's pretty clear how he had outlined what he wanted to do. The main thing, so unlike the Mozart Requiem, which was really finished by the students, and there's a lot of question about which note goes where, and is this really the structure? In this case, I think there was no question. It was essentially finished. The main thing that is left out of this concerto is Bartók was incredibly meticulous about expression markings in all of his other pieces, so that almost every measure has a dynamic marking or an expression marking of some kind. And this concerto has almost none. And that is where the sort of controversies and interpretations have come in over the years.
So how do you approach that then? I mean, given that he has those marks in his other works, how do you go, where's the emphasis here? Where's the strength here? Where do I pull back here?
You know, like anything else, the more you know a composer's language, the better, the more fluent you are in the way they write, the more it makes sense to you and the easier it is to kind of figure out what they likely would have said at that moment. And in the end, there's a little bit of guesswork. And finally comes the moment where Lucas Richman and I will put it together with the orchestra, and he may have some slightly different ideas, which are equally valid. We will figure out how to piece those and make an organic whole out of all of it.
When do you actually rehearse with the symphony? Is that on Saturday?
We rehearse Friday and Saturday.
Friday and Saturday. I'm always amazed at people like you who do what you do for a living and will play these. To me, they all seem monumental works. I don't care how long or short they are. Just to be able to do what you do with an orchestra seems to me monumental, but then people will fly in and they'll rehearse for a couple of hours and maybe a couple of hours the next day, and then that's it. It just always amazes me. Do you ever, sometimes when you're rehearsing, go, am I really doing this? I mean, is this just so old hat to you?
It actually amazes me too. An orchestra is not just a collection of musicians, it's a collection of experts at each of their instruments. And so when you bring people at that level together, they already from the beginning are at such a high level that you can have this miracle of, you know, just two rehearsals and putting it together. It never ceases to amaze me. And I think that there's no question that what happens when I get the opportunity to play with an orchestra, the sum is far greater than each of the individual parts. It's such an uplifting feeling. You know, I mean, when you're a pianist and you play a solo recital, for example, it's really a solo recital. You're all by yourself on that stage. And it's all about what you can do. And then to have, you know, 80, 90 people around me, all of whom are working towards that same goal and who have such a level of expertise to help bring it up, it's an incredible ride. I'm very lucky to get to do this for a living.